Case number 22-3432, Abib Al-Adili versus Merrick Garland. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Becker, you may proceed for the petitioner.
Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to do this remotely because I am in trial. And thank you for granting oral argument in this case. This is a very crucial case and a very important case. And a very unjust result, one of the most unjust results and illogical results I've ever seen. And my first case in this court was in 1976. So what happened here is that my client is scheduled to be deported based on a restitution order in the amount of $10,600. And it's not based on any facts. And the United States Supreme Court in the Najuan case indicated you have to base any order based on the facts in deportation where the amount in controversy is disputed. You have to look at the facts. Now, what happened in this case is back in 2010, there was a determination made by Judge Nettles, who was the immigration court judge at that time. She's no longer an immigration court judge. But I quoted extensively from that 2010 record. And in that record, she indicated she did not have to be fair, and did not have to, she did not have to deduct. You could include taxes, you could include insurance amounts. Whatever amount you wanted to include, you could include, because it was the benefit of the bargain. And what happened is that in 2017, we filed a motion to reopen based on this, because my client was picked up and incarcerated for many months and scheduled for deportation. So we asked the court to reopen the case. And the judge reopened the case, but I think he reopened the case more because of issue number two, the immigration. And the judge did not have the benefit of the transcript at that time. And he assumed that back in 2010, there had been a fair determination of why this amount exceeded 10,000. And what happened was that in the restitution order in the state court, this was never presented. It was never presented to the defendant at that time, my client, Mr. Habib Al-Adili. So they didn't have the record. And what Hertz did, and there's litigation concerning Hertz now, when we try to subpoena their records, and they indicated there are no records. There's class action litigation because of arrests that were made from Hertz. Now, Hertz owns Thrifty, and we have a footnote indicating that Hertz owns Thrifty and Dollar. So when you go to the counter, it's just one company there, even though they give the appearance that it's more than one. So my client didn't realize it was $10,600 until after, and no immigration consequences were ever told him.
When was this first brought up? This issue?
This was first brought up in 2010 by the first counsel. But the judge didn't let him bring it up because he was late in filing his material. But he brought the issue forward, and the judge said she didn't have to be fair. It's right in there. And if you affirm this somehow, put her words in there. Please, put her words in there. Because she said she did not have to be fair, and the Supreme Court says you have to look at the circumstances.
Was that appeal taken to the BIA at that time?
No, there was no appeal taken. He said he was in jail for 3 months. He lost 50 pounds, and he just wanted to move on. He was in acute distress. He was still in jail during his first immigration trial. He moved on, and then it was not until 2017 that he was arrested for deportation. And then he was in jail. He was in jail all the way through his immigration hearing again.
Was he in jail because of this car or because of something else?
He was in jail because of an immigration detainer. Because once you get...
You mean after he lost? After he lost? This is after he lost.
Pardon? Say that again.
This was after he lost the case before the first immigration judge, right?
Right.
Then he was taken into jail.
So I picked it up, and to be honest with you, I think the only reason the case was picked up is because they thought that he was part of the Hamani people. They thought the judge, immigration judge, whoever was screening the case, thought he was Christian, but he's really a Buddhist. He's practicing Buddhism now. But I think that's irrelevant. But the second judge, then Judge Karush, when I went to trial on the individual hearing, he said this has already been decided by Judge Nettles in 2010. But remember, he didn't have the transcript then because there never was an appeal. So he was just assuming that Judge Nettles went through this when she didn't. She said she could be unfair, it doesn't matter. She said it could be double recovery, it doesn't matter.
So what's your best argument for why the loss to Thrifty was less than $10,000?
Can I make one argument for 3 points?
Go ahead.
Okay, they sent an invoice. They charged for taxes on money that they never got. In other words, they said our bill is $10,000, the state taxes would be this, the airport fees would be this. Number two, they charged for full insurance, full coverage insurance. So how can you charge somebody for full coverage insurance and then also charge them for the loss? Does that make sense? No, it doesn't, right?
Well,
there never was any estimate.
But isn't the argument is that you don't get the benefit of the loss damage waiver if you violate the contract? I mean, that's on the Thrifty website or wherever it is. There are certain circumstances where the LDW doesn't apply, and voiding and violating the contract is one of them.
Well, Your Honor, but in all due respect, the only way that can be the only way the $10,600 is relevant to us, we're not worried about Herbert Smith getting their money. What we're worried about is the law, the only way it's relevant is in restitution. So in terms of restitution, that does not make sense. It might make sense in the corporate boardroom for 50 first, but that argument can't be made in restitution. And this is the only way the $10,600 is relevant to us, is because we put it in the restitution award. And the law says that if the loss is over $10,000 and it involves fraud, which this thing involved fraud anyway, my guy returned his car back to her. So he returned it. On the police report, it said returned by unknown person. But who would the unknown person be?
I want to go back to this because I think the Supreme Court has said that we can look, or that you can look at the restitution order in the underlying criminal case. I mean, it's certainly probative of what the loss in the case was, I think. It may not be dispositive. I don't think it's dispositive, but it's certainly pretty good evidence, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm so glad you just said that. It's not dispositive, and that's all I've asked. Since I picked up this case in 2017, it's applied to common sense. The Board of Immigration Appeals did not do that. They just rubber stamped it. But let me please apply rationality. It's like my guy got pushed off a skyscraper. He's fallen. You are the last one. Please reach out a hand. He's been in this country, and this is his only deviation of the law. He's been in this country since, I think, 2006. He's a permanent resident, and this is the only deviation. He's out of jail now, out of bond. He has 3 kids. He was granted asylum status. He was out in the desert in Saudi Arabia. He was one of those people that came because the Saudis weren't going to take them in. They were scattered throughout the world. The United States took the bulk of them. He's living here, and I need you just to please, just look at the facts. There's no loss amount amounting to $10,600. There's no fraud. And Judge Gruch would have looked at it, but he assumed that the first judge would have looked at it. And anybody should have taken this appeal, but apparently he didn't want to pay the lawyer to take the appeal. I don't know. But his lawyer did reserve the issue for appeal, but the appeal was never taken. So, believe me, you are the first one that have actually listened to me and are ready to, I think, consider the Dejuan case. Now, the Dejuan case was written in 2009. The first immigration court trial, they call it the individual hearing, was in 2010, but neither counsel nor the court apparently was aware of that decision, but it was not brought up in that case. So I'm begging you to please just look at this case as judges, fair judges, would look at this case. I'm not trying to change the law. I'm not trying to make you wrong. Whatever, I'm just trying to please get justice for my guy. He deserves it, and his family deserves it. There is no way that this man can be deported based on a failure to return a rental car. And also, I made an argument, I'm not so sure it's clear, but there's an order, and it's 2013, over 40 years before I got involved in the case. While there was no immigration attorney or nothing going on, and this order nullified all the remaining probation. My guy paid some, but there was other amount of restitution that was owed. And the court closed the probation and said very significantly, restitution can be sought civilly in 2017. So the state court, and of course, federal courts have to respect the judgments of state courts. The state court said that this is a civil obligation.
So okay, all right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Becker. You'll have, I think you've reserved rebuttal time. Is that right? 3 minutes?
A couple minutes.
Okay, great. We'll hear from the government now. You'll have your rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. May it please the court, Robin Blyer for the government. Initially, thank you for letting me appear remotely. In this case, the agency properly considered the sentencing-related documents, which are allowed by Nijuan and this court's case in Pila, which we cite in our brief. And they looked to the pre-sentence report, which set the record in 903 to 908, probation order on page 982, and the order of conviction and sentence, which is 983 and also refers to the probation order on 982. In that, they found that the restitution amount was for over $10,000. And that's the amount the criminal court did based on what Thrifty had indicated its loss was. And therefore, you know, the criminal documents show that the loss was for over $10,000.
Well, it's not the same thing, though, is it? I mean, we're supposed to look at it. I mean, yes, it's evidence, but we don't take it completely at face value, do we? I mean, it's evidence, but it's odd. I mean, as a matter of common sense, on the face of the document, it looks odd that you would charge somebody for the insurance and also for the damage. I mean, that seems to me the biggest oddity in this case about whether there was a $10,000 loss or not. I mean, if Thrifty were to sue the petitioner here in a civil case for breach of contract, they would not have been able to recover $10,600, right? So that's why I find it odd that would be the loss amount in this case.
Well, that may be true, Your Honor. He never contested this amount. He never contested this amount in criminal court, which seems like that would have been the obvious place to do it. He never did that. He's only raising that now.
Right, but okay, but in Nijuan, and I'm not sure how to pronounce it, so I may be pronouncing it incorrectly, but the court says you have two chances to challenge the loss number, right? The first one is in the sentencing, and the second one is in the immigration proceeding. So the court leaves it open that you might not challenge it, I think, in the sentencing, but you would challenge it later. I mean, look, for all kinds of reasons in criminal court, you might not challenge something. You might say, fine, it doesn't matter to me. I can't pay $10,600. I can't pay $9,600. You enter whatever you want. But by the time you get to the immigration proceeding, he says, look, the 10,000 number means a lot because it means the difference between me getting deported or not, so I'm challenging it. So he's challenging it now. I don't know why he can't do that, right? You agree that he can do it.
He can do it, Your Honor, but he hasn't brought forth any evidence other than his counsel's statements, which aren't evidence.
But why? What would evidence would he need other than, hey, here's the key piece of evidence against me, which is this sheet that Thrifty prepared. On the face of it, I'm being charged for insurance and the loss. That doesn't make any sense. So that's my evidence, quote unquote. I'm just poking holes in your evidence because I think the government has the burden, right, to show by clear and convincing that it's 10 grand. And I don't know why the person who doesn't have the burden can't just poke holes in the evidence, right? And he doesn't have to put in his own evidence, does he?
I don't know that I would assume he'd have to put in something, Your Honor. He can't just say, oh, this isn't the right amount and move on. I mean, that's, you know, on what basis?
No, but he can base it on, I'm looking at Thrifty's statement. That's the $10,660.56. And as Judge Nalbandi just pointed out, you know, the loss damage waiver is over $2,800 on that, and then you've got the repair of over $1,700. And I'm quoting from a sentence in the, I guess this is in the, I don't know, the argument of Mr. Becker. And answer this. He says, one need not be a consumer advocate to see that if you fully paid for the insurance for vehicle damage in the amount of $2,881, you should not also be liable to pay the supposed waived vehicle damage claimed to be $1,757. Now, how do you answer that?
I think that it was in Judge Nettle's decision that she indicated that if he did not return the car as he was supposed to within, I believe it was 7 days, that the loss damage waiver, that was a violation of the contract, and that loss damage waiver, didn't kick in, and he would be, I mean, he said, I will pay for that, that's what I'm doing. So I think they charged him for that, even though it didn't provide him protections necessarily.
Okay.
Let's say
that's in the fine print, and let's say, okay, so he owes the $1,757 for the damage, but then he wouldn't keep having to pay that $16.95 a day for 170 days, because if that collision damage waiver goes out the window because he didn't comply with the contract, how can Thrifty keep charging him that daily rate that adds up to over $2,800? I mean, that's what doesn't make sense to me.
Your Honor, we don't know why they were charging that. Like, there's no evidence in here why they did or didn't, why they did charge.
Well, yeah, but that's the point. The burden is, as Judge Nalbandi, the government has the burden of showing by clear and convincing evidence what is lost exceeded $10,000. And how has it done that if it's all it's saying, well, we got this one-page statement from Thrifty, and that was the amount of restitution, therefore, ergo, that's his loss, but it doesn't necessarily follow.
Your Honor, we have that because the criminal documents say that's what it is. We're not relying solely on the restitution order of Thrifty. We're relying on the criminal sentencing documents that Nijuan and Pila say we can rely on.
But those just base it on what Thrifty's invoice was.
But there's nothing to indicate he ever brought any conflicting evidence or any other, like, other objective evidence to indicate that that was not the amount he should have paid. He admitted that that's how much he was to pay when he conceded the allegations in the MTA, in the notice to appear. He admitted during the hearing, I think it's at 264, that, you know, he was ordered to pay that, and that's what he was going to pay. He said that, I think he said at some point after that, he was going to maybe, you know, assert that that wasn't correct, but he wanted to admit it so he could start making payments.
All right, but that's all in the restitution order, but we're talking now in the immigration court about the loss amount to Thrifty. And it looks like
that's in the record, Your Honor, in the hearing transcript.
That's from the criminal matter, or is this from the hearing before the immigration judge?
In the hearing before the immigration judge, I'm going to pull the page. It's 264 during the December 8th, 2010 hearing. It says on the lower part of the page, I guess line 18. So it says, I'm not asking you what you found out. I'm asking what you were ordered to pay. You were ordered to pay $10,660.56, right? And the petitioner says, yes. And you never contested that, yes or no? And he says, no. And then, on the next page, let's see. So on 265, it says at 6 and 7, line 6 and 7, and you never said, I want a hearing to make sure this $10,660.56 is right. You never did that, right? Yes or no? And so petitioner says, yes, yes. And I believe it was DHS counsel said, you did? And he says, I did not object, but I was waiting to finish my probation and then request a hearing. And when asked what he was requesting a hearing on, he said, so I can request payments. And it says, right, you wanted to make a payment plan, right? Yes. He wasn't objecting to the amount.
All right, so he's not objecting to the restitution amount to Thrifty, but that's not the same question we now have of, was Thrifty's loss over $10,000? And we got these numbers that you don't seem to be able to explain away. I mean, how can they continue to charge him every day for the loss damage waiver of roughly $17 a day, and yet also charge him for the repair cost? Because if he has the collision waiver, he shouldn't have to pay the repair cost. And on the other hand, if he loses the collision waiver, then they shouldn't be charging him for 170 days for that premium. If they're going to also charge him the $1,757 to repair the car. I just don't see how you can have it both ways.
Your Honor, I'm not a specialist in rental car contracts by any stretch of the imagination, so I don't claim to be. But, I think at one point Judge Nettles, who was the initial immigration judge, discussed that and said it may not be fair, and it may be against consumer rights or whatever, but she seemed to think that that was okay, and that amount was acceptable to make the charge or the restitution amount more than $10,000, which
you don't have to be an expert in rental car contracts. I don't think any of us are, but we do have a certain amount of logic, supposedly, we're charged with, and the immigration judge's logic on the loss amount just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Your Honor, I will say that the criminal court accepted this number. That was the amount that they found was the amount of restitution owed, and so that's the number we're left with.
No, we're not. We're in immigration court now, and the standard is different. The burden of proof is on the government here to prove that to be deported, he's got to have caused Thrifty to incur a loss of over $10,000. And you've got to do it by clear and convincing evidence.
And he's admitted that number several times.
But only for the restitution amount, not for the loss amount.
Well, I mean, Your Honor, that's the pre-sentence investigation report indicates that that amount was going to be payable to Thrifty in several places in that record, in 904, 905, and 906. That's the loss amount that they're talking about, that they lost during like the 170 days he kept the car.
That's the amount they requested. What about Mr. Becker's point? Look, forget about the loss, the damage amount versus the premium amount. What about just the taxes, the airport and the sales tax? Even those little amounts exceed $660, and those aren't losses to Thrifty, because there's no evidence Thrifty ever had to pay the airport or the city taxes or the state taxes, and that alone would get you under $10,000. How do you answer that?
I don't know that that gets you under $10,000, because the initial amount was over $11,000. So I'm not sure that I'd have to do the math.
No, the only difference that reduced it from $11,000 to $10,000 is he paid $469, because it shows funds collected, $469. So no, the $10,660 is their number, and I guess I see that the state tax was over 200 and over 500 and something right there, and then you've got the amount due to the county. I mean, there's clearly over 600 just in taxes and fees that wouldn't be due Thrifty at all.
Unless they had to pay them, and then he had to pay them back for that.
Do you have any evidence that no Thrifty ever paid those state or airport taxes?
No, but I don't have any evidence that they didn't pay it.
You've got the burden. You, the government, have the burden of proving that Thrifty incurred those as a loss.
They say that they paid. I mean, they've listed their amounts that they've lost, or they've had to pay, or money that's been expended on.
No. They didn't expend all this loss damage waiver business of 28. They didn't spend that. That's just what they're saying. Hey, the contract gives us $17 or $16.96 a day for 170 days. They don't really claim they lost that. They just want that in.
Well, someone had to pay for the loss.
Well, the 1757, presumably somebody paid, but nobody paid for all this insurance premium. That's just a charge to the renter of the car.
I mean, our position is that the criminal court used this amount, and this is the amount that the restitution and the amount of loss to Thrifty that they claimed.
Okay.
Okay, great. Do you have something else?
No, I see my time is up.
Okay, all right. Thank you, and now we'll hear rebuttal.
Yes, thank you very much. First of all, this Thrifty itemization is not a restitution statement. It's an invoice, like you would get from a customer. It's a fictional invoice. That's why they included taxes in it. This was never paid, obviously. And the government never came in and said they wanted their money. He never had a restitution hearing. This was presented to him after the plea as a fait accompli. And I want this parting thing. Nijuan, and also the case of Taylor versus United States, 495 U.S. 575, both of them indicate that the findings regarding the amount must be tied to the specific counts covered by the conviction, and must be obtained under fundamentally fair procedures. And I think opposing counsel has lost sight of what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with severe consequences over a heading, and as first counsel said to Judge Nettles, it's Mickey Mouse. And Judge Narrows didn't contradict that. She said it may be Mickey Mouse, but she believed she was tied to their contract, which is fallacious.
Now, what? Let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question. What relief are you seeking now? Your brief indicates that you want it sent back to the immigration court for full consideration of this. Is that what you want? Send it to the immigration court and have hearings on what the actual loss is?
That would be fine. Whatever, if you guys can just throw it out, that'd be fine, but I don't know if you guys do it that way. But you could send it back just so the judges know that they have to look at the exact losses. These losses have to be proved. And this was all fallacious. There never was a restitution hearing. Nobody from Thrift ever testified. This was just presented. So thank you. If you save us, that would be great. I don't, whatever procedure, if you want to send it back, I'll go through it, because I totally believe that, I know there's no way in the world they can prove this, because I know it was never proved, and I tried to get their records, and they said they have no records. And I know they're being sued for a number of cases just like this, in a class action. So that would be fine if you send it back.
I assume you'd prefer us just to throw it out ourselves, but if not, your fallback position is send it back. Is that correct?
Yes. You know more about it than me, Your Honor.
Well, I don't assume that.
where's your client now? Is he still in this country?
Yes, he's out. He had to pay $25,000 for his friends, his family, and his fundraiser. He's out on a very high bond. He's out with his family. He's a great guy, by the way.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Your time is up. The case will be submitted.